Jay Horowitz with a special edition of Amazing Conversation with my old friend of, God, more than 40 years, Dwight Gooden.
Yeah.
Doc, you got, I'm old, you're still young.
I don't know if I'm still young. I got 10 grandkids.
Jay. Oh, God. You filled your own football team.
Three great grandkids.
Three great grandkids?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
I didn't know it's been that long, but until you told me, 41
yeah,
years.
Yeah, 40 years from 1984.
That's amazing.
So, first of all, congratulations on having your number report. We retired. Were you and Daryl separate ceremonies? Date hasn't been set next year. How did you get a feel when you see 16 go to the roof at Citi Field?
Oh, I've been thinking about that a lot since Steve told me and we talked about it.
Yeah.
I can't imagine. It seemed, you know, surreal to have that because I'm looking at that day as a big celebration for myself, my family, all my friends, the front office, everybody, because everything that I've been through, everything that's going on the field, off the field,
right,
and to get to share that moment one more time with the fans and everyone, and then to see that number rise there. I mean, I don't know. Hopefully I get through it without getting too emotional that day, but I definitely get it as a celebration.
Doc, why do you, speaking, you know, on and off the field, why do you think you've been so beloved all this time? I mean, you've had great years, great wins, but you've had some troubles on and off the field, but still the fans adore you. I mean, why do you think that's the case?
I think most of the thing is, like, I'll start with off the field. I think I always was honest. You know, I made a lot of mistakes, obviously. The mess that I made, I try to turn into messages. I try to help young kids. I'm open and honest about the mistakes I've made with addiction and so on. It's been very tough to go through that at the times, but the fans always stuck with me. I think, and on the field, they know even my bad games, always gave 100%. Always tried to be a good teammate in the clubhouse and in the dugout as well. So I think that plays a big part of it.
I mean, did you, you know, was it hard to face up to a lot of the stuff through the years? I mean,
yes. It was very hard because I wasn't raised that way. I had good parents. I come back from a loving background. And, you know, I hurt a lot of people. And one of the things that was hard for me was to forgive myself. I think I struggled with that the most of all. And once I got clean, I had to deal with all the mistakes I made, all the people I hurt, the family I hurt. And I think I self-medicated with the guilt instead of just being completely honest with myself. And unfortunately, the thing that helped me the most was when I went to a mental institution in 2019, I went to this mental institution, High Focus in New Jersey. I was there for 9 months, and I think that's what made me get honest inside myself.
I mean, it's still an ongoing battle, right?
Oh, yes, 100%. I'm never going to be truly recovered, and I have to understand that. The things that I love the most, I had to let go. Some family members I had to let go was very hard, and I just do the best I can. I can't make no promises for tomorrow, but today, you know, I'm doing well, and then tomorrow I'll deal with that as it comes. But, you know, it's a tough thing. It's a lifelong battle. It's a tough disease, a disease that you hate, but I think the more you talk about it, the more you're involved with your recovery, it helps a lot.
I know one of the things I felt bad about was the parade in 87. Oh, that'd be a tough day for you, probably. I mean,
that was tough. That was one of the days, too, Jay, that you, it's funny you bring that up because it probably, I don't know if I ever will get over that, but I've gotten better dealing with that
right.
Because it was a situation that you can't redo.
Right.
I remember that like it was yesterday. Anytime I talk about it, it comes right there because that should have been one of the happiest days of my
right.
life. And it started out that way. It then turned into one of the worst days of my life. Went on, and that kept me sick for a very long time to get over.
Let me talk about some more happier moments. I was in the office at Hunkin Stengel Fieldhouse late March 1984. David Johnson called you in, and you really didn't know what was going on and whether you're going to make the team or not make the team right at that point.
Right. Yeah, that was difficult. I remember pitching for Davey in Tidewater the year before, just for the playoffs in World Series.
In the playoffs, right.
Yes, he told me, he said, whatever you manage to make sure I'll be on the team. And I went to spring training as a non-roster player. Every day I'd pitch, you know, the media would say, Doc, they say you pitch well, but because of your age, you're probably going to double or triple A. I would run in Davey's office and say, Davey, they say I'm going down the minors. He goes, don't worry about it, let him talk, you'll make the team. But you never really know until you're told, and you're right. I think it was the last spring training game
right.
at St. Petersburg.
We were leaving to go to New York.
Right. We were getting ready to leave that day, and he came up to me like the fifth day and said, congratulations, you made the team. And one of the greatest things about that was for me making the team, but even a bigger, greater moment was sharing that moment with my dad and telling him I made the team. That was one of the only time I've seen my dad actually cry.
Yeah. Do you think, you know, how much did it help you in 83 when you were at Lynchburg? You had the 300 strikeouts, 191 innings at Shea Stadium. Davey saw you pitch that day.
Yes.
How much do you think that helped in his forming his judgment?
I think it helped a lot because Davey, when he saw me pitch, well, I started off slow in Lynchburg. I was 0-3, and then I won like 18 out of the next 20
starts. I think you won up, was it 19-4 or something
19-4
like
with 300 strikeouts. And the thing about that, I remember in the minor leagues, you play double hitters is only 7 innings.
Right.
And my last start was a double hitter game. I'm only going 7. I needed 14 strikeouts. And I got the 14 strikeouts. And after that game, they said, you're going to AAA. And pitching for David, pitching great for him, I think it played a big part because David really went to bat for me. And
he fought for you. You know, the people in the front office, I'm sure you know, 19, too young, go get seen. And you skipped from A ball, no double A, no triple A, really, right to the major leagues. And Davey, he knew what you were made of and had a hunch to stick with you.
Yes, definitely. And I think for me personally, what helped was I pitched the exhibition game at Shea Stadium that year and pitched in the park. And that was the first time I've ever been in a big league stadium. And I think that's where everything changed for me. My confidence kicked in. Pitching in that park, I was like, man, this is great. I'd love to be here. And went from there. And then, like you mentioned, pitching for Davey in triple A, where Davey saw me firsthand. He thought that even though I was 19, that I would be ready.
I always felt that, you know, we had new players, but Davey was the perfect manager for our team in 84. At his press conference in 83, he said, I'm going to be the manager, and went to turn to Frank Cash. What took you so long? What was it about Davey that made him, you know, good for our team, do you think?
I think with Davey, he knew how to deal with 25 personalities. He had 25 different personalities. And Davey knew how to deal with that. He dealt with the front office well. I thought he was very honest with the players about playing time and so on. And he communicated well. He had a set of rules. But as long as he didn't break his rules, it was good. And he's the only manager that I know that we call a player manager, where on a plane ride, you know, he's sitting in the back of the plane, play cards with you. On the road, he go out, have a drink or have dinner with you. Where most managers, they sit in the front of the plane with the coaches. They only go out to eat with the coaches. But Davey was one of us. But he did have his rules. And I think that by him being a former player, he can relate with us real well, but he set the tone for us.
A couple of the guys who meant to talk about, what did Gary Carter mean to your career?
Oh man, Gary was like, he was ultimate. He played a big part of my success in 85. And I remember Gary joining us in 85 in spring training, and I was like, man, this is crazy, because I threw to Gary in the All-Star game in 84.
We struck the side out in the first
game. Yeah, I struck the side out, and Gary said, wouldn't this be nice to do every fifth day? Not knowing was going to trade for him that offseason.
Right.
And Gary actually came to my wedding in 87, which you was there too.
Yes, I was.
And,
I was.
We hit it off right away. And Gary, the thing about him, he demanded the best out of me. It was up 10 runs. He wanted me to pitch like it was 1-0. And even like the side days, when I threw on the side, Gary's the only catcher I ever had that would come down and catch my side days as well.
Yeah.
But I miss Gary. He might have been a better person than a player, if possible.
Died too young, 57 years old.
Wow, that's amazing.
And yeah. Keith, and before I get to Keith, Mel Stoudemire, your pitching coach.
Oh man, Mel's another guy, played a big influence in my career. And Mel was also a good friend of mine, as you was. I remember when I had my incidents, when I went to Smith's the first time, you and Mel was the first guy that I saw there. He came to see me. I think we met at your house.
Yes.
We went to your house, and Mel was there. Just a good, genuine guy. And I think he cared more about me as a person than as a player. That played a big part, especially at a young age. And then have Mel later in my career, you know, with the Yankees, to be there for me at the end of my career was a big part as well. So Mel was a good friend.
And you were speaking of the Yankees, you were teaming with David Cohn with the Mets and with the Yankees too, right? I mean.
Oh yeah, David was the best. I remember Corny helped me out a lot making an adjustment to the American League because you have the extra hitter, the designated hitter, instead of having the pitcher spot. So he talked me a lot about, you know, making an adjustment and pitching at Yankee Stadium. And David's still a good friend today, and I'm very happy for David. And he definitely was a steal in that trade when we got him in 1987.
He could have been an 86 Met, right?
Oh, 100%.
100%.
Well, he would have been one of the leaders.
He could have been an 86
Met. He would have been one of the leaders, for sure.
Without any problem, he would have fit right in with the crew, right?
No doubt about it. When we got him, I remember Ronnie had the best line. Ronnie goes, when we saw him throwing this on the side, he couldn't believe it. He said, how did we get this guy? Then Ronnie said, on one plane ride, he's sliding up and down the plane. He said, now I know why we got him.
No, he was a good guy.
Yeah, he was a good
and
guy.
And Keith, your surrogate pitching coach, Keith Hernandez.
Oh, Keith was the best. I love Keith. And Keith actually called me about 2 weeks ago to congratulate me. And Keith always looked up to Keith as a leader. He was my the assistant pitching coach to Mel on the field my rookie year. I didn't really know the hitters, and Keith would tell me how to pitch certain guys, how to face guys in certain situations. And also, a lot of times he'll come by the hotel room and make sure I was okay, that I wasn't homesick, anything like that. I mean, just a true guy, true leader, and a good
man.
Well,
I want to go back to the first game in Houston. Mom and Dad were there.
Yes.
The store, people don't believe, but you were locked out of the Astrodome up there, right? Because they thought you were too young, you didn't have any identification. I think I had to call Steve Garland, our good friend, to get you in that day.
And oh, man.
Five innings, you got a win.
Yes, that was amazing. So I had the Mets were kind of to fly my parents in. I had lunch with my parents that day, and I was so nervous for my first big league start. And so I asked the concierge how to get to the Astrodome, and he told me it was like a 3-mile walk. And so I said, okay. So I walked to the Astrodome. I didn't know how to get in, so I climbed like an 8-foot fence, and the security guard saw me. Yeah. They came right over there and said, "Hey, Kenny, what are you doing?" And I said, "I'm Dwight Gooden, I'm pitching." Like, I show my league, like, "Sure you are." Luckily, Steve Garland and the trainers get there early,
right.
So they called down. And Steve had to actually come get me. And Steve asked me, "Dog, what are you doing?" I said, "Well, I didn't know how to get in." I got in, and like you said,
Bob. You didn't take the bus, right?
I didn't take the bus. I was too nervous. Yeah. And I'm just too excited about the first start. And then having my parents there, that made me more, you know, nervous. So, and then, like you say, like 4 or 5 hours later, I had to pitch 5 minutes and got my first big league win.
So, 84, 17-9, you know, rookie of the year, 276 strikeouts in the beginning of the K quarter.
Yes.
I mean, you told me one time, that you did look at the K quarter,
yes.
Right?
Yes. You know, when I was playing, I couldn't say that. I had to give them, you know, the correct answer, you know, politically correct answer, what they want to hear. I said, no, I didn't know how many I had. But after a while, because when you strike a guy out, they pass the ball around the infield. The third baseman is the last guy to get the ball before he throws the yield. And I would take a look up at left field corner and right. See how many I had, because Gary and myself, we was caught in, I had to get 10 strikeouts. He wanted me to have 10 strikeouts every time, so I counted them. Once I got the 10, then I just kind of didn't mind if I get the other strikeouts or not.
Is it true that Gary was, before analytics, he used to keep a book on all the hitters. So before analytics, it was Gary well prepared for every pitcher, right?
Oh, definitely. Gary was the best at that. You know, not like now where they got like the scouting reports like a phone book.
Right.
Gary would come on before the starts to be me, Gary, and Mel Sotomayor before I warm up, and he'll go over the lineup in his little handbook, and he'll say, okay, this is the guy we have trouble with. So there's always one guy on every team that you didn't want to beat you. If you had to walk him 4 times, he'll say, okay, this guy, we know we can get him with the all-speed stuff. And this guy, still, if you throw fastballs, keep it away. So Gary would go over that, and then it's just like a memory bank. You lock it in.
Did you see 85 coming, Doc? 24-4, 153 ERA, 268 strikeouts, pitching triple crown. Did you see that coming after 84?
I didn't really see those numbers coming, but I had more confidence after going through 1 year and having Gary. Gary was unbelievable. He made me believe that I was the best to ever pitch that particular day. He was great with dealing with different guys' personalities. And I knew I had more confidence. I was a little stronger. I was a little bigger. I was ready for the challenge, but I didn't see that year coming at all. But I think, I tell you what, though, Jay, once we got back to the All-Star break, you started seeing bigger crowds here, more media attention, which I appreciate you for handling the media, for keeping that, you know, pressure off me. And it was, it was more of a baseball game. It was a challenge. But Gary made me accept that challenge. And every game was a big event, and I look forward to it.
Talk about a guy who always gets overlooked. Is Kevin Mitch was really a rookie that year.
Yes.
And he played all the different positions. What world was his nickname?
World.
Mitch, what was he like playing with, Doc?
Mitch, one of the guys, I think each team needed to have a guy like Mitch in the clubhouse. I got to keep everybody loose when things are not going well. Long road trips, long plane rides. He always was upbeat and very positive, a lot of energy. Kept right good, and plus he could play a little bit. I mean, that didn't hurt either.
Right, no question. Now,
great guy, and Mitch, he went on to have a great career, but I thought Mitch was great. And actually, in 83, when I was with, I called up AAA, Mitch got called up too, so Davey got to see him a little bit. But Mitch played like every position on the field besides pitch and catch. But just a great guy, great clubhouse guy, a true leader, and one guy, if get into a fight, I want him on my team.
No question. Doc, with all the stuff you've been through, did you ever think this would be possible? I mean, did you ever... we had talked about it a couple of times. Yeah. Did you ever think you would get to this point, that you would be recognized here?
Not like this, no. And all you wanted, Jay, was that one more time, and you want to be a part of something. And I always felt like, man, I could have did this differently. I've done something differently because
right.
The Mets gave me a lot. The Whippons gave me a lot. I mean, I liked those guys a lot, and I cared about those guys a lot. And I think they cared about me deeply. Unfortunately, when we had to go separate ways in 95, I felt bad. I felt bad for the fans and everybody because of what happened. I always wanted to come back in some shape or form. But unfortunately, I never got to that. But to have my number retired now, that's like an honor, the highest honor you can get from a team that's saying everything's okay. They forgave me for all I did off the field, and they welcomed me back into the
family. Did you pitch against us in a Subway Series game one time?
Yes.
That kind of felt crazy, right?
Yeah, it's funny. So I remember when they cut ties, it was okay. And then I pitched for the Yankees 96, 97. I think Steve Phillips was the general manager, and,
right.
I played with Steve. We had a good relationship, and we still do. I played with him in Little Falls, so I called him. I said, "Steve, any chance of me coming back?" He goes, "Unfortunately, Doc, we got no room. We wish you the best." I signed with Cleveland in 98-99. After 99, I called Steve again. I said, "Anything there?" He goes, "We got no openings, Doc, sorry." And then I signed with Houston. Jerry Hunsinger, who used to be the assistant general manager,
right, Jerry's a good friend.
Was there. He said, "We can sign you, Doc, to a minor league contract." But they had some pitcher, I don't remember his name. He said, "He's coming back from Tommy John. Whenever he's ready, I might have put you in the bullpen, or I don't know what we're going to do."
Right.
So I had one start, and the guy was ready. So he said, "We can put you in the bullpen and trade you to Tampa." So I figured that was gonna be my last year anyway. So I got traded to Tampa. I pitched 8 games. I got released. I called Steve again. I said, look, I'll go to AAA. I'll do whatever. I just want to finish my career as a Met.
Right.
He said, unfortunately, Doc, we got nothing we could do. I said, okay, I understand that. And I signed back with the Yankees. And Joyce called me into the office like a week later. He goes, no, Billy Connors, you know, Billy said, sure. Doc, we need to see you in the office. So I thought I was going to get released. He said, we need you up in New York to pitch. It's a day-night double hitter. The day game's at Shea, night game at Yankee Stadium. And you're pitching the day game at Shea. I'm like, oh, man. I couldn't tell him I wasn't ready, but that's all I really wanted, that one more time to go to Shea Stadium.
Right.
And I got to go there, pitch well, and stay with the team the rest of the year. But it's kind of weird, bittersweet, being wearing a Yankee uniform and playing the Mets in the World Series. That didn't feel right, but now everything has come full circle, and I think everything is
done. You know what's crazy? How many? I don't have to tell me. How many one-hitters did you pitch for the Mets? Remember, Keith Moreland did it late.
Yes.
With more than one, right? Couple of one-hitters.
I think three. But that one sticks out more than anything.
And you wind up pitching a no-hitter with the Yankees.
I know. That's crazy. That's crazy. And I still think the one hitter I pitched in 84, that should have been a no-hitter. I think Red Foley was the scorekeeper.
I used to have so many fights with Red Foley about scorekeeping.
Yeah. And he told me.
One game, Ed Lynch was pitching. He gave up 3 runs in 3 innings, and Red didn't give him a save.
Oh, man.
And Red was a feisty, good guy, but a feisty old guy.
Yeah, he was
back and forth. And it was kind of crazy that the one. You know, I remember Keith Moreland got the hit.
Keith Moreland hit a hit. He was a slow roller to Ray Knight at third. Ray filled it, and you know Keith Moreland couldn't run a lick, but Ray couldn't fill the ball cleanly, right. So he never threw it, and they gave him a hit. The only base runner all game. But what made it worse? A week later, Ray Fuller said, "I screwed up, Doc. That should have been no hitter."
That's a
deal. I said, "Well, change it." But you know, that was fine. And then, like you said, they threw a no hitter with the Yankees.
It was crazy.
That was crazy. And it turned out that was the last game my dad saw me pitch. He passed away shortly after.
Tell the people what your dad meant to you. I know you used to talk to me after every start, right? And he came near. I remember Dan and Al had great conversation. What did he mean to your career?
Oh, man, he meant everything, Jay. He taught me the game of baseball when I was 10 years old. Big baseball fan. Growing up in Tampa, Cincinnati Reds had spring training there. We used to go to all the Reds games. He would be at all my little league games, all high school games. And once I made the team, I had to call him before I talked to the media. After every start, I don't know if you remember those big satellite dishes,
right.
Like the spaceship. We had one of those in the backyard. And so you watch the games on WR with Raph and Tim. And so after every game, I would come in. Even my pitch, like a one-hitter, two-hitter, he would always find something.
What year did he pass, Doc? I forget.
97. January 97, yes. He would always say, good game, but why did you throw this certain pitch? What did you think of this pitch? Because he didn't want me to just settle for that. He always wanted me to work on something.
Yeah.
And he was a big influence on my career and my life. And that was one of the things, too. I'll never forget in 87 when I filled that first test to go tell my dad that. That's the one time that I know I really hurt him. But to his credit, he had a great relationship with Mel Stoudemire. When they would talk, he would tell Mel what I worked on, what to look for, and Mel would talk to him. But he played a big influence on my career. Once he passed, playing baseball was never the same for me again.
Doc, tell the people what you're doing now with kids and stuff. So, I mean, I know you're in Philly with Hackensack Hospital in New Jersey.
Yes.
And what are the kind of things you like to do?
Yeah, with the hospital, what I do a lot of times, you have kids in there with cancer or different things. I try to go in there, cheer them up, tell them, you know, if you get better, we can go to a game. And their parents are there. A lot of parents have been staying at the hospital for weeks and, you know, months, some of them. Some travel all over. So I just try to spend time with them, watch a game with them. To let them know, I could at least try to distract them for a little bit that they're there. And the kids with addiction, I talk with them as well, just try to share the things I've been through with them, and hopefully they don't make the same mistakes I've made as well. I try to do a lot of that.
I'm sure they, you try and tell them, don't do, unfortunately, what I did some of the time.
Yeah, a lot of things, don't do the mistakes I made, and always have someone. I think the key for me is, and the key for them, have somebody that you trust that you can talk to about whatever's bothering you. And I think, like, a lot of times with mental health, people take that for granted. I know growing up myself, when somebody said, you're crazy, you just kind of laugh it off. You know, men don't cry, men don't share their problems, men don't hug. So I had to relearn all that stuff. But just having the kids understand that addiction doesn't discriminate. It don't matter you're white, black, rich, poor, it's around. But having somebody you can talk to, I think now kids probably have more peer pressure than any generation before. Somebody that they're comfortable with, they can talk to about whatever. And
how do you answer, you know, people ask me, I tell you what I tell them. You have 194 wins in for your career.
Yeah.
I think your winning percentage is over 630 or something like that. Mm-hmm. You know. Do you ever think about what might have been Hall of Fame? But let me tell you my thing is, Hall of Fame would have been great, but for me, what you're doing now, you're affecting lives, affecting people. In a way, it's kind of, even more important in the Hall of Fame, what you're doing now. That's my take on it.
100%, Jay. And for me to get to that point was, unfortunately, when I got incarcerated, you know, I looked at my whole life. I said, man, I'd like to just get out of here. And I look back at what people said I should have been doing, what people said I should have won more games. People say you should have been a Hall of Fame. I look back at only thing I wanted to do at that time was make it to the big leagues, stay healthy, play a long time. And I got to win a lot of awards, got to meet a lot of friends, won 3 World Series. I have nothing to feel bad about my career. And now I'm still around for the damage that I've done to myself and my family. But the good Lord has kept me here. So I think now, as you just mentioned, that means a lot that you said that is helping others, because you're talking about a life now, dealing with addiction and things like that, because I've done a lot more than people have lost their life for.
No question. 100%.
Gone. So my message is just trying to help other people every day that I can, and just sharing my message, what I've been through. And it took a long time to get to that point because, like you say, the embarrassment, the shame, the guilt, all the stuff that I had, I had to find somewhere to
forgive myself. You know, Doctor, all the stuff you're talking about, you never hid. And I wonder, from the PR point of view, your 86 World Series against the Red Sox, not great starts, right?
No, that was terrible.
But you never hid. You went to the, that's why I think why the media, you know, you ran away, we had to walk to down the end of the hall to the bullpen.
Yep.
You know, you never hid. You were always there, the good times, the bad times, and the media, the monkey time. To me, that's why the media, the people loved you, that you were always straightforward and told it like it was.
Yes, that was a big thing. And I'll tell you one big thing about that. Your advice to me about dealing with the media helped a lot when I was young. I don't think I gave you enough credit for where you helped me. And Rusty, stop. I never forget, I had a conversation with Rusty.
Good man.
He's a great man. He pulled me in the back of the training room one day because I didn't talk to the media one day after the bad start. He goes, if you're going to be in front of your locker when you do well, you need to be in front of your locker when you don't do well. That's what it's all about. And that always stuck with me.
Rusty was a good humanitarian.
Yeah, Rusty was great. I love Rusty.
Doc, I can't wait. When the time flies, I'm thrilled that you get, I can't wait when you get set the date.
Yes.
And you're going to practice your speech.
I'm just going to go with my heart.
So that's the best
way
to go.
3 minutes or 2 hours, I'm just going to go
with
my
heart. I'm so thrilled for you, Dwight. Yeah. And pleasure knowing you all these years. And thank you for your time, man.
My pleasure, Jay. Thanks for having me, brother. I love you.
I love you too, Doc. Yes.